A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 229. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of The Owl Service. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Yes, we're looking at this strange fantasy sort of mystical tale that was sort of aimed at older children as an ITV serial, the 8 25-minute episodes that were first broadcast in 1969 and 1970 in black and white, although it was filmed in color and was later broadcast in color, and the DVD copy that we've been looking at is also in color. And it focuses on these three teenagers who are brought together by circumstance, and two of them each had a single parent, and those two parents have now married, and they get caught up in the circumstance where they are in this sort of summer home that one of the families had a connection to when they're back there for this summer, and one of the three teenagers is the son of a housekeeper who is helping this family. And they come across this old dinner service with a design featuring owls on it. That is the owl service of the title. And it seems to have a mystical hold and a connection to events of the distant past.
Yes, it does. And as you say, the floral design on the plates somehow resemble small, sort of like geometrically drawn owls. And it's when Alison, one of the teenagers, starts tracing this pattern that it triggers a connection with an ancient legend, and all sorts of weird things start to happen. And this old love triangle threatens to play out again with the same sort of tragic ending looming towards us. So we're in the sort of hearts of folklore and legend, and there's some weird stuff going down, Brian.
Yes. And as a show and originally a novel written by Alan Garner, the significance of place is very important. And the significance in this case of plates as well as of place is important. With these owl plates, and Allison is tracing the patterns on the plates onto paper, which then turn into little paper owls. And we also hear some strange noises from the attic where these plates have been stored for many years. And of course, this strange thing that when Allison has traced these owls onto paper, and you have these sort of paper owls, the plates are now blank. The pattern isn't on them anymore.
Yes, there's an awful lot of mysteries concerned with these plates, and several bits and pieces that we haven't really got to so far. So we'll mention some of the strange goings on to do with the owl service and with the house and the events surrounding it. So as well as the scratchy noises from the attic, which we presume are the owls of the owl service itself, we also have, I suppose quite traditionally for a country house mystery or for a ghost story, which this sort of resembles in places, we have a locked door, which has a mystery behind it. And this is a door in one of the stables attached to this old country house. And of course, the strange noises from behind the door, they can't open it. Nobody seems to know where the key is. As I say, Brian, lots of features of the ghost story there in a way.
Yes, absolutely. And in one of the rooms in the basement, I believe, of the main house, there is some plaster on the wall which crumbles and falls away unexpectedly and reveals a picture drawn on the wall of the figure Bloodawed from this legend, an actual ancient legend, that is what things seem to be revolving on, and these characters, in a way, seem to be reliving.
And, of course, we've got Roger and his photography, which we mentioned in the last episode. He's very keen on it. He sort of adapts one of the rooms in the house as his studio. And he's been taking photos through this strange hole in the stone of Grognu, a standing stone which has been pierced in legend by a spear. And, of course, when he develops his pictures that he's been taking through this hole, well, in the way of these shows and in the way like a ghost story, he sees figures in the pictures that he couldn't see himself. And they appear to be, for instance, a figure standing on the top of a hill throwing a spear. So you can sort of see where it's going, and it's almost familiar territory. I keep mentioning this with the ghost stories of M.R. James that we've been discussing recently. Strange figures appearing in pictures and on the skyline that perhaps aren't there, or not everybody can see them, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And we see in these photos some of these things that look like quite ancient images, and some that look like things from 2 or 3 decades earlier. So some interesting things there. It also brings in something that we don't see so much now, but certainly was a hobby that teenagers would sometimes adopt, of having a dark room and taking photographs and developing your own photographs and doing different prints and different types of prints from different photographs that were taken, or different prints from the same photograph. So we do see, sort of some slightly nostalgic things with that coming in, which of course were a more current thing at the time.
The fun you could have when we had film instead of digital, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And we also wonder about the housekeeper, Nancy, and the groundskeeper, Hugh Halfbacon, and what the relationship was with them and with the former owner of the house, and what went on decades earlier when those characters were teenagers. So we get something sort of wrapped up in different time frames, in a way similar to what we had with Redshift, with similar things happening in different circumstances and different time periods.
Yes, this idea that the events of the Owl Service have been played out more than once in the past, and possibly quite recently before Alison and Roger and Gwyn get caught up with it again. And the other mystery, of course, we mentioned last time is, where is Alison's mother, Margaret, who clearly is in the room in some of the sort of late evening discussions the family are having after dinner, but she doesn't get any lines, we don't see her. Another little mystery from the show.
Yeah, that was a very odd choice that is slightly confusing at points, but that's how it was done, that's how it was put together.
So it is a mysterious show, like, I suppose, as you say, Redshift was in its way quite difficult to fathom at times, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And I think the extra recaps they add that actually give you more information than the episodes themselves had, I think add a lot that sort of you need in order to follow the show.
Okay, so they do add something and help with our understanding. Perhaps we could have done with something similar when we were watching Redshift.
Maybe so.
So we've got this whole subject of folk lore and fantasy. As our regular listeners know, we often do drift slightly in genre away from straight science fiction into areas of fantasy and horror. And Kim Newman's rather interesting essay in the program notes booklet with the DVD set of this show, The Owl Service, lists quite a number of shows and films in this sort of folk horror genre. And it's quite interesting because it places this one as possibly the first in a number of British TV shows that deal with these aspects of myth and legend which in some ways survive into modern times or are revived in modern times and can cause harm to the characters in the story. On film, they're probably or too numerous to mention, but the two, I think the two key films that everybody knows from this period of British filmmaking and British horror were Blood on Satan's Claw and The Wicker Man, obviously, which is probably the most famous example of this.
Yes, the 1970s Christopher Lee film, The Wicker Man. Very interesting handling of that and sort of more modern moral issues done in that case. Some interesting stuff there. But more within our area, getting into the TV things, you have things like Nigel Neal's The Stone Tape, which is very much getting into old, mysterious, mystical things coming back into the present. And also Moraine, which was a Nigel Neal story that predated his Beasts TV series, which included an episode called Baby, which got into some of those kinds of things. So Nigel Neal was certainly interested in that, and you got into a number of different things like that on television.
And there are other examples from this period as well. There's a supernatural show called Dead of Night, and one of the surviving episodes of that is a story called The Exorcism, which really plays into this sort of like revival of folk legend with some middle-class couples having a party in their country cottage where things go quite horribly wrong. And I've seen that, and it's a fine piece of television. We'll mention in passing three plays for today. Pender's Fen always seems to get cited in this category, along with one called Robin Redbreast. And of course, Red Shift, which we have actually watched and talked about before, and of course is by the same author as The Owl Service.
And then even when we get into children's television, in the 1970s in the UK, children's television was allowed to be darker and sort of more layered and more interesting, I think, than almost any other time period or origin of children's television. And you had things like Escape into Night and certainly one of our favorites, Children of the Stones, which get into very sort of interesting and layered and complex things with these sort of mystical things coming into them.
And then if The Owl Service is at one end, is at the beginning of this 10-year period of British folklore horror, then Kim Newman interestingly puts the end point of this period as being the final Nigel Neal Quatermass show, which was, you may remember, was on ITV in 1979 and was a sort of apocalyptic mixture of the old and the new in the last appearance for Professor Quatermass. So it's interesting stuff, Brian. It perhaps slightly drifts off topic for us, but it's the article in the programme notes by Newman, and it's just some of these shows that we have actually considered. Some of them we've watched and liked a great deal, like Children of the Stones. Perhaps some others like Red Shift we had more problems with. But if you're interested in this subject, if you perhaps know more about the idea of folklore horror in British television, then perhaps get in touch with us on the Facebook group. We'd be interested to hear your views on it. Or if you're interested in actually hearing more discussion about this, then as ever, the excellent Mr. Jim Moon and his Hypnobobs podcast are highly recommended for this sort of stuff.
Yes, interesting stuff for sure. So we should get into some of our own thoughts, more than we already have, about The Owl Service. Eamon, what did you like about The Owl Service?
Well, I think it's an easier show to get into and to understand the writing and so on than the other show by Alan Garner and Peter Plummer, which was Red Shift. The adaptation itself is very very faithful to his novel, which I suppose it would be, where Alan Garner adapting his own book. So in terms of accessibility, in terms of its suitability for its older sort of teenage audience of the time, I think this is a more interesting show in a way than Red Shift, perhaps.
Okay, it does have a longer time to play things out than Redshift did, and it sort of delves into things a little more. I thought the look of this and the choices they made for the house they filmed in and the locations, I thought those were quite nice, and it had a look that is sort of its own thing, and I thought was quite nice for the type of show they were doing.
Yes, and of course it's very nice to be able to see it in colour, which was denied to the original audience in 69 by a TV strike, or a technician strike, but there you go. So yes, it does look good, and there's some interesting stuff, and it's nice to see another show with a standing stone mystery in it. There seems to be quite a common theme in the 70s on television and film. As we say, it's that folklore horror thing creeping in again.
Yes, absolutely.
What about the performances here, Brian? Did you enjoy any of these in particular, or have problems with any of them?
I thought they were okay. At times, Gillian Hill says Allison was a little weaker than the others, but for most of it, she was fairly good, and I think the others were all reasonable. I don't think any jumped out. These, you know, there were some fairly young actors here, and I think they did an okay job, but nothing that was especially strong in it, and nothing that that detracted too much either, I would say.
Okay. I particularly liked Edwin Richfield, who I always find an interesting actor on British television. I thought he was very good. Yeah, the teens are okay. I felt that poor Roger, played by Francis Wallace, I thought he got a slightly raw deal as an actor, because his role is to be rather whiny and petulant, and also to be sort of cast as the villain in this reenacted folk legend. So, but apart from that, no, the acting was pretty good, and nothing stuck out for the wrong reasons.
Anything else you particularly liked about this one?
I think it's complex stuff. I thought it was, you know, it's quite an interesting show from an interesting book. I did like some of the scratchy sort of spooky stuff going on, the strange noises, things going bumped behind locked doors. So that was quite good. What about yourself? Anything else on the plus side before we turn to the minuses?
Not a great deal. Like, I think it was overall put together reasonably well as a production. You know, the look and the sound of it and the performances were all, you know, all sort of held together.
Okay. So what about the show didn't work quite so well for you, Brian? Would there be any points that you would like to make in the negative column?
Yes, I think so. I found the storytelling in this was sort of cumbersome. The idea is nice, but it's very sort of opaque in terms of how you get to that. So you slowly figure it out, and it's sort of awkward in that way. And the recaps that are sort of there to tell you the plot, which the episodes themselves, I think, don't expose adequately enough. There are plot points that are not at all easy to pick up on until they're described, you know, if they're there at all, until they're described in the recaps. And I thought that was sort of unfortunate. That was an awkward way of telling the story that I thought didn't work as well as I would have liked.
Yes, any show or film that needs the voiceover to explain what's happening, you've always got to ask questions about the storytelling, I guess. And yes, it does suffer from that. It does need those introductory explanations, really, to actually tell you what's happening. And when it gets towards its conclusion in the last two episodes, well, what's actually going on becomes very mysterious indeed, and a great deal is left to the viewer's imagination to try and work it out and to explain what actually happened at the end, which obviously we can't give away because of spoilers, but it is, it's not all neatly tied up for us with a bow at the end, is it, Brian?
No, it isn't, and I don't mind that too much, but it felt like that story should have done a better job of presenting the plot, you know, the plot points that were sort of buried and had to be explained with these recaps. The other thing that I thought was quite odd and sort of bothered me with this was the missing Margaret. The fact that we have a central character who is referenced many times and is part of the premise of the thing, but we never see her on screen and we never have any dialogue from her. We just keep being told that she's there and she's an important part of the relationship dynamics that are, you know, a strong part of this. Well, if she's so central to the relationships, we should see those relationships. And we don't, because she just doesn't appear.
It's bizarre. The family relax after dinner, sitting in a room and chatting before making their way up to bed. And quite clearly, Margaret is supposed to be in the room with them, but we don't see her, we don't hear her. It is an odd choice, even just to have had a character, an actor appearing in just, you know, for a few brief lines. So it does seem a bit of strange, one of the mysteries of the Owl Service.
Yeah, and, you know, we get a lot about Roger's relationship with his father and the newly developing relationship of Allison and Clive, Roger's father, who's her new stepfather. And we get references to Allison's relationship with her mother and to, you know, the newly married couple, the two parents, and to Roger building a relationship with both Allison and Margaret. But because Margaret isn't there, we don't get to see those relationship dynamics that we're sort of building on with this story.
Yes, it is a strange choice, but there you go. The absence of the mother in the Owl Service. Title for an essay, I think.
Yes, maybe so.
There's also, I suppose, it's we should mention the pacing. It's an 8-episode show. I'm never quite sure whether that is because it was written to be 8 episodes or they were told they had an 8-episode slot to fill. This one, I know I complain about this often, Brian, but this one really felt like it could have been cut down to a rather sort of tighter 6 episodes. There seemed to be an awful lot of padding, particularly in the infamous third quarter.
Yes, well, that's true. But in addition to that, I think the story they're telling about the legend and how the legend is repeated is an interesting story, but it is something that they tell very indirectly. It's sort of buried under layers, and we only get the most interesting parts of it really fairly near the end. And I think some of the things that were done at the end were good, but there was maybe you're right, a little too much padding there. But also because leading up to that, it's so deeply buried in this to the point where we need to have some of the plot points told to us in the recaps. It is rather strange, and I think it doesn't work as well because of that.
No. Okay, so as you can tell, there are some plus points and minus points to the Owl Service. And I guess, Brian, we're getting to that point where we have to make a recommendation to our listeners. As I said, here in the UK, it's a £10 DVD set, probably slightly more expensive for you to import it. Should this be one that our listeners add to their collection? Should they track this down and watch The Owl Service?
Well, I will go first, and I'll say really no. It's interesting what they were trying to do, but it is so oblique in how it's put together and padded as well as being oblique. So I would say no, this is not one that I would recommend.
Okay. I was a fan of the book when I was younger, and so I was quite looking forward to seeing the series, which I'd never seen. And I will say it is better and more to clearer what's going on than in Red Shift, which I really had problems with, particularly because I'd enjoyed it as a teenager. And when I went back to watch it more recently, I found it rather pretentious. But it's still a difficult and opaque show that doesn't really explain what's going on. And it's interesting that we listed those various other TV shows in this sort of folk horror genre. And of the ones that we watched, with the exception of Red Shift, I think I'd put all the others ahead of The Owl Service. And in particular, and how often have we said this in the past, Brian, recommend our listeners, if they've not seen Children of the Stones, go and buy that instead, and come to The Owl Service very much further down the line, I'd have thought. So yes, it's probably a no from both of us here at British Invaders. As so often happens, we seem to be recommending Children of the Stones instead. But there you go, that's one of our favourites here. But as ever, if you think we've made the wrong call, if you'd put The Owl Service much higher up the list, then do get in touch with us and let us know why.
Yes, absolutely. And I think maybe we should take that list of things that we mentioned and put that on our Facebook group and discuss it there, because there are a number of interesting things, both from film and television, that go into this sort of mystical genre from the 70s.
An interesting time on British TV.
Indeed. So, in summary, The Owl Service tells the story of this newly put together blended family with mother and daughter Margaret and Allison, and the father and son Clive and Roger, where Clive and Margaret have just married. So we now have a new couple, and these teenagers are learning to get along with the new family. And also there is a housekeeper where they are staying for the summer in Wales. Nancy, the housekeeper, and her son, Gwyn, also come into it. And things become complicated when Allison discovers this set of plates in the attic, a service of plates with owls drawn onto them, which she traces onto paper, and you have these paper owls, and the pattern of the owls on the plates disappears in some cases. And we learn about this ancient legend, which is actually genuinely an ancient legend, about these three characters in a sort of love triangle. And we see that the past repeats itself, and we see things becoming complicated and a repetition of the legend happening with our new young teenage characters, and we learn that this has been repeated probably many times, and we get glimpses at other things that have happened in relation to this as we have gone along.
A complicated show for children's television in the late 1960s, and maybe one that kicked off the decade of folk horror. As I say, do get in touch with us and let us know what you think.
Yes, absolutely.
And of course, next time, come back and join us, because we're off on a trip to the moon. We'll be trying on some rather dangerous trousers and getting a very close shave indeed as we delve into the wonderful science fiction features of Wallace and Gromit. That's the claymation show from the BBC. And really, there's quite a lot to talk about the delights of Wallace and Gromit next time, Brian.
Yes, a favorite of ours and a favorite of a lot of people, I think. And going and looking back at it, there's actually a lot of science fiction involved with it, so that'll be fun to talk about for sure. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there. And we can discuss these sort of folk horror type things and the mystical shows that we've been talking about here. And also, if you have suggestions for things that we might cover in the future, let us know.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, drop by the friendly Voice of Geeks internet streaming radio network. That's at vognetwork.com, where you'll find British Invaders on Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll also find several other very good podcasts to check out and enjoy, and let them know that you heard it first on British Invaders.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England signing off and saying, I'm just tracing the outline of our logo on trying to make some paper flying saucers, Brian. Can you hear that scratching noise coming from the attic?